On July 1st, 1997, China wasted no time in asserting its sovereignty over Hong Kong. On this very avenue in the township of Xiongshui, the People's Liberation Army rolled in. And 23 years on, after the city witnessed its worst social and political upheaval since the handover, Beijing is reasserting itself again. Dawn of July 1st, 1997, 4,000 PLA troops rolled into Hong Kong with a vast arsenal of weapons and 21 armoured personnel carriers. In the district of Xiongshui, hundreds of villagers turned up to welcome the new army in spite of the pouring rain, heralding the dawn of one country, two systems rule within China. The year-old Xiongshui villager, Raymond Choi, remembers watching the events unfold on TV. Born and bred in Xiongshui Wai, his family used to live in one of the nine villages that made up the walled enclave. But Hong Kong's urban sprawl in the 80s meant his village was torn down to make way for a public housing estate bearing the same name. His youth was filled with optimism of the booming 80s when everyone made money. The city was busy transforming from a manufacturing hub as factories moved to the mainland into a financial powerhouse. But like many Hong Kongers, 1989 was a turning point when the Tiananmen Square protests and subsequent crackdown saw locals lose faith in the government in Beijing.
I also don't have any fears about becoming, you know, going back to China in after 1997. Maybe I'm still young. I have a very quick change after 4th of June, okay? It kicks off my head to know I'm really a Chinese, okay? I have to care about my country, because before that, most of the people living in Hong Kong, they don't think they are people of China. We know we are Chinese, but we don't think we are belongs to China.
Okay, Choi graduated as an industrial designer, but decided to teach after a short stint with a toy manufacturer. He found more satisfaction reaching out to secondary school students, not just as their arts teacher, but as a role model.
I enjoy chatting with my students and teach them how to grow, not as just only the knowledge in the book, and also how I teach them how to become a real people, a human, okay? And I accompany with them to go through all ups and downs. Achievement, I think it's the kind of achievement of my life.
Being in a school bordering China, about 30 to 40% of his students come from the mainland. Choi has noticed a big difference since his early days as a teacher as compared to today.
The students come from China, they got very low self-esteem. They can't speak fluent Cantonese. If they speak in Putonghua, the other classmates will laugh at them, okay? But nowadays, most of the people speak in Putonghua. They're proud of speaking Putonghua. Not only the students come from China, but also the students living in Hong Kong.
The new wave of migrants will surely play a significant role in reshaping the Hong Kong identity. Many had thought that Hong Kong returning to the motherland after decades of colonial rule would mean children singing the national anthem and learning to love and respect China. But instead, these youths ended up developing a strong sense of local identity, pluralistic and relatively liberal.
when they grow older and have a sense of self-identity, they don't feel good about the situation in China. So I think I would say that Beijing's intention to restore confidence in Hong Kong people on Beijing and on the system in mainland China had been failed in the last 20 years.
The respected Public Opinion Research Institute, or PORI, once run by the University of Hong Kong but now independent, has found that public ratings for freedom has fallen significantly, along with public perception of prosperity, equality and fairness. This in the wake of mass protests that have paralyzed parts of Hong Kong in the last few years.
In the past, even when there were political debate on political reform, when people are not happy about the government, you know, people still have confidence in the economic prosperity in Hong Kong, still are confident in the rule of law in Hong Kong. But nowadays, it seems that even the court have been questioned by the society, because quite a lot of cases have been quite debatable. I think overall speaking, the overall social sentiment is quite negative, because people feel that there is a all-round changes in Hong Kong society and becoming more authoritative, and no, there's no longer one country, two system in Hong Kong.
Chung expects the social discontent towards Beijing and the Hong Kong government will last for an extended period. He warns that if things don't improve, many will emigrate. The number of applications for certificate of no criminal conviction required for various types of visa jumped nearly 14% on year in the first quarter. But not all youths are pessimistic about the future. Many also want to stay put.
They just have some emotions during the last 2 years, okay? And they also want Hong Kong to become better, but they don't have any power to change it. Okay, and also some of my students graduated, they also have a mission to stay in Hong Kong and also want to make Hong Kong better.
The 2019 protest movement, some would argue, was due to a unique sense of Hong Kong identity. Now, the city has a rich immigrant history, but subsequent generations, it seems, identified more with the city rather than the country. No doubt, that identity will be reshaped again by those who choose to stay. It's a far cry from the gleaming skyscrapers and skylines that Hong Kong is famous for. In the district of Sam Tui Po is Hong Kong's poorest and predominantly working class. Ng Wai Tung is a social worker who's been serving the neighbourhood for more than 30 years. He manages the SOCO office, Society for Community Organisation, in Sam Tui Po, and is preparing for another night visit.
Every week, we go outreaching the homeless people twice. And tonight, we have some Rotary Cup. They donate some dumpling, drinking, and biscuits, and masks to the homeless people.
In Hong Kong, nearly one of seven of the population still lives below the poverty line. And there are an estimated 2,000 homeless people living in the city, with more than half in Tsam Tui Po and Yau Tsim Mong. Here at Tung Chau Street Park, scores of vagrants call it home for the night, like Hong Go or Brother Hong. He can't afford a so-called coffin cubicle, a 5-meter-square home that combines bed, toilet and kitchen all in one room.
Some of them always here and they have the same location as before. They know we will deliver something, but of course they just mentioned that the housing issue is a problem. Even they have 2,500 for the ranch islands, but the area is quite difficult, like with the cubicle with the bed bug, they cannot sleep. If they want to have a private toilet, it's quite expensive, going up to 4,500. They cannot afford.
Hong Kong's real estate is the world's most expensive. Home prices are at 20 times the median income, making it the least affordable market anywhere in the world. The average price of a home, $1.2 million.
I think for the poor people in Hong Kong, they have, they have two aspects cannot escape. One is paying rent. You know, if you do not pay the rent today, you absolutely become homeless. You know, paying rent is the, even you do not eat, you cannot pay for the medical fee, you must pay the rent or you become homeless. And the government said, oh, you can apply the public housing, but you know, from the average waiting time is from 3 years coming to 5 or 8 years. And the government said, oh, coming next 10 years, they still cannot find enough land. I don't understand what the land development doing. Do the government have the ability have in financial? Do the government have the land? The government have the ability to get better land in Yuen Long and in New Territory. But the speed is too slow.
Former Transport and Housing Minister Anthony Cheung, now a research scholar at the Education University of Hong Kong, says there needs to be more constructive thinking from the local administration to fix the city's deep-rooted structural problems.
I would not reduce everything to the housing crisis or the social disparity, poverty. Of course, these are problems that are not unique to Hong Kong. There is also this political tension, which cannot be dealt with simply by having adequate housing. Now, people are not happy. And if people are not happy, then politically, and then if you can't solve problems in terms of social distribution or redistribution, if the economy is not doing well, then social anger will accumulate and things will become worse.
Cheung is a former minister in the cabinet of then hardliner chief executive Leong Chun-ying. But he's actually a moderate with long-standing ties to the opposition Democratic Party. He's urging pro-democracy parties to participate in upcoming elections, in spite of what he calls the difficult and challenging situation they're in, after Beijing overhauled the city's electoral system to ensure that only patriots rule Hong Kong.
I think we need, under one country, two systems, we need both optimism and pragmatism. Optimism in the sense that at least you must put some faith into the prospect of one country, two systems. You don't see that, well, that's the beginning of the end of Hong Kong. But at the same time, you have to be pragmatic. You have to take one country, two systems as it is, because we are talking about putting two rather different ways of life, two different systems, sometimes rather diverse different values together.
37-year-old district councillor Lo Tin Hei, who's taken over as chairman of the Democratic Party, says the party has yet to decide as to whether to run in the upcoming polls. He says he's received overtures from messengers from Beijing urging the party to do so. His members are undecided as to whether they want to play second fiddle in a permanent minority.
Whenever we run for an election, we have to make sure that we run in a dignified way, and that kind of limitations that the new electoral system have, we're having a very strong question on that, whether or not we can run in a dignified way. So a lot of people raise concern on that. And of course, the function of the council is also very much questioned during the discussion, because, you know, when the directly elected seats were reduced to just 20-odd percent from 50 percent. The function of the people's voices in the council will be much less in the future.
Under the new electoral system, only 20 out of the 90 seats in the legislature will be directly elected. And the Legislative Council hopefuls are required to seek nomination from an election committee and then to be screened by a vetting body to ensure they're patriotic enough.
Those red lines have always been there, in my view, because Beijing had always been very sensitive about issues of national integrity, national security, Hong Kong not becoming a Trojan horse of foreign powers because of what is written into the basic law from day one. So now that we know clearly what the red lines are, and we have gone through very restless times, so in a way we have to come to senses.
With rampant socio-economic inequality and a widening political divide, there are lots of problems to fix in this city. Proper reforms to solve its problems, but recognizing the current political realities and constraints. For now, there are no easy answers, but Beijing's heavy-handedness has given the city time to breathe, think, and to reconsider its approach. The Greater Bay Area Initiative by China has ambitions to rival and surpass that of San Francisco, New York, or Tokyo. It plans to link Hong Kong, Macau, and nine other neighboring Chinese cities into one big megalopolis. Hong Kong has an integral role to play as a financial and trading hub to rival that of New York. That's due to its relatively strong rule of law and robust capital markets. And local companies have also been told to go north in search of opportunities. Samson Wong runs a successful architectural and interior design firm in Hong Kong. From a one-man show from 14 years ago, his business has grown into a firm with over 30 associates and designers, collecting accolades and awards along the way. Before the pandemic hit, putting a halt to most of the cross-border travel, the mainland market made up 40% of its total revenue.
I doing maybe a hotel job in Hong Kong, or just about one building. But we took if I design a hotel hospitality project, maybe in GBA, it's maybe about 20 times bigger than Hong Kong. But the difference is the project in GBA of the whole hotel maybe just belongs to a simple or a small group of hotel brand, not the big global hotel brand. It's just like in Hong Kong. So I think this is the reason that's why a lot of company, they will looking about this opportunity in GBA.
The Greater Bay Area is home to 70 million people, 10 times the size of Hong Kong, and gives a shot in the arm for firms like Wong's to find his own niche market and to grow even bigger.
The first step for person, they have to open mind, open vision to connect with, or maybe they get some chance to go back to our country, go back to China.
But it's too soon to tell if Beijing's heavy-handedness will jeopardize Hong Kong's role as a global financial hub. Relatively low taxes, a highly developed financial system, light regulation, and proximity to the rest of Asia continues to make it attractive for multinationals and banks. Authorities recently offered private banks and family offices a range of tax incentives that include tax cuts. This in a bid to bolster the city's $1.5 trillion wealth management industry. Global banks like Goldman Sachs, Citibank, and Morgan Stanley have decided to stay put and to expand their staffing footprint.
Hong Kong's uniqueness, different status as an SAR is still guaranteed by the Bisc Law, even though you have this 2047 time limit, which is not a hard one. It depends on how Hong Kong develops in the future. But whether or not Hong Kong could still maintain its vibrant systems as before. In other words, we are still a very open society, a lot of freedoms, civil freedoms. We are still very global, connected to the international community, East meeting West kind of intermediary. Now, we have to ensure that we can still play this function as well. Because if we don't, then what is the use of Hong Kong to the mainland?
2047 marks the legal expiration of the One Country, Two Systems model that guarantees Hong Kong's autonomy. But even before that, China's political and economic influence on Hong Kong will only continue to grow. The city remains overwhelmingly dependent on China for its investment, commercial and economic opportunities. But as it charts its own course and future, Hong Kong has already been made painfully aware that when it comes to national interests, those are red lines that cannot be crossed. In the next episode of CNA Correspondent, my colleague Olivia Seong travels across China's Rust Belt in its northeast. There she gets a sense of the country's challenges as it prepares to mark 100 years of the Communist Party on July 1st. I'm Roland Lim. Thanks for watching.